Happy Independence Day, one and all. I'm Alan Lytle, WUKY News. July 4th, 1867 was no ordinary Independence Day celebration in Lexington, Kentucky. In fact, the gathering of up to 10,000 people, mainly African Americans, marked a truly historic occasion that only now we're beginning to learn more about. Joining me to talk about this landmark civil rights event, nearly a century before the 1964 March on Frankfort, is Tom Law with Voyager Media Group, which is working with the Kentucky Archaeological Survey to get the word out about all this. Good day to you.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well. We got this email just recently about this event, and I got to tell you, I'm a history grad student at the University of Kentucky, and I wasn't even aware that this was that this actually happened. So fill our listeners in a little bit on the history of this.
Well, the event, which took place literally within inside of the present-day campus of the University of Kentucky, was one of those massive civil rights events that were rare in Kentucky during this period, but were somewhat marginalized as a footnote to history because it didn't receive that much coverage in local newspapers who dismissed the importance of the event. This fresh off the Civil War. But fortunately for us, in doing a project for the Kentucky Archaeological and Heritage Series, we came across some research that pointed us into the direction of the Cincinnati Commercial, which published a detailed account of the event, as well as the text of all the speeches. And from there, we were able to put together really a historical perspective on not only the scope of the event, but the importance of the event in the context of not only Kentucky history, but national history.
And you mentioned some of the speeches. John Fee, the founder of Berea College, spoke at this. What else can we glean from this?
Well, and you can see the actual copy of the Cincinnati Commercial on the companion website for the Davis Bottom Project that's hosted on the website of the Department of Anthropology, University of Kentucky. But you also have at this event General James Brisbane, who was an abolitionist and commander of the famed 5th USCC Cavalry, and he was instrumental in many events for the Freedmen's Bureau in Lexington. Reverend G.H. Graham, and Willard Davis himself, the namesake of Davis Bottom, a community just to the north of the University of Kentucky. And the research on Willard Davis is what led us to this event. But most of the speakers were speaking out against two primary issues, state laws that prohibited the right to vote, and the right for black men to testify in state court, which left them really open to all kinds of problems, both with work, socially, you name it. If you couldn't testify for yourself in court, it left you open to all kinds of problems and issues. So the civil rights speeches were given during a period that was just starting for troubles as far as repercussions through night riders and for friends and colleagues, both professionally and personally, for many of the speakers, let alone for the dangers of any African-American who spoke out for their civil rights during this period. It got worse after this event.
And as you mentioned, the Lexington papers all but ignored it. Talk a little bit about the Cincinnati publication.
Well, the Cincinnati Commercial was trying to be neutral, but it was really a Republican-leaning newspaper at the time, the Party of Lincoln. And they would regularly receive and send out correspondence to various events that were happening in the region. It was one of the most highly respected newspapers east of the or west of the Alleghenies. Murat Halstead was the publisher at that time. Well, they put on the front page this article by EDS, and that's all we know, the initials of the correspondent, EDS, who submitted a vivid description of the parade through the streets of downtown Lexington that stretched at one point for over a mile, and this gathering, picnic, music, and speeches that was held in Gibson's Woods in the afternoon, where the crowd stood for hours quietly listening to all of these impassioned civil rights speeches. The civil rights event that happened, the Cincinnati Commercial, a copy was received by Senator Charles Sumner in Washington, D.C., as they were debating an important piece of legislation, the Reconstruction Act of 1867. And he used it in arguments in a very heated debate, which is documented in the Congressional Globe, with Senator Garrett Davis, representing Kentucky, about the conditions for African Americans and what they called union men, civil rights advocates, in the state of Kentucky and the South in general.
So how does this play into the prevailing myth about Kentucky and the Civil War? And I bring up the often used phrase that Kentucky waited to join the Confederacy after the war was over.
Certainly that's played out better by historians and scholars. It takes a lot of time and detail to discuss Kentucky after the Civil War. But what astonishes me about this event is the extent of the communications networks and the beginning of the organizations for African Americans, by African Americans, to establish their civil rights. The civic organizations, the infrastructure that's needed to begin in the first two generations after slavery, this pathway to the modern civil rights movement. It's already happening here and now in 1867, signified by this enormous outpouring of support on the 4th of July.
And why do you think that this story languished for as long as it has, and the fact that you're bringing this up now in 2014?
I think there's two reasons. One is that it was downplayed, diminished by the newspapers at the time, and only because we have this incredibly detailed description in the Cincinnati Commercial can we reconstruct the event as it happened. There are so few images from this time period, not only in Kentucky, but throughout America, and very few images, rare to find any images documenting civil rights events or African-American history. That's the second part, is we're so visually driven these days that without a visual record or an illustration, the artwork that commemorates this event, it's really difficult to try and put your head around to see the event without a strong visual to document the event.
Okay, kind of on a tangent here, explain a little bit about the project, the Davis Bottom project that you all are working on, and then the film that you're working on as well.
Right. The Kentucky Archaeology Series is an ongoing series in collaboration with the Kentucky Heritage Council, the Kentucky Archaeological Survey, and a host of scholars and academic institutions. We began in 2000. It continues today with distribution through Kentucky Educational Television. Our last project was the Davis Bottom Project, Davis Bottom Rare History, Valuable Lives, and it was about the history of a small community, working-class community, just to the north of the University of Kentucky, that had an incredible diverse history that very few people knew about until the researchers started conducting all kinds of research history, oral histories about this particular neighborhood. It was one of about 12 ethnic enclaves that were established in Lexington after the Civil War, where thousands of newly freed African Americans came to establish their lives. Through the research, we found out about Willard Davis, who was a civil rights advocate, and that led us to this event, the 4th of July, 1867. We also learned about the contributions of the Hathaway family to this event, including Robert Elijah Hathaway, a minister and community leader who was one of the founding members of the Kentucky State Benevolent Association, which helped to organize this event and many other events to follow. From that, I was introduced to Miss Yvonne Giles, who has spent really a lifetime researching the Hathaway family and Lexington's African-American history. And we all knew that the Hathaway family in and of itself was a heck of a story. Not only for their accomplishments, they all became pioneering professionals in the ministry, education, healthcare, and the arts, but also the times through which they lived, these first two generations after the Civil War, and how they and others established these vital institutions on the march towards the modern civil rights movement.
Now, I understand there's an Indiegogo campaign to get this film made.
Yeah, we took a page from this history, specifically the 4th of July, 1867, a grassroots event, and we launched a grassroots campaign through Indiegogo. It's a popular crowdfunding service online, and we're seeking to raise $12,000 for the research and development phase of the Hathaway Family documentary project. So anybody can contribute what they can through this online service and help us make history.
And preserve it in this case as well.
Yeah, that's the wonderful thing about working with our colleagues in the institutions is we can make all of the materials that are used in these projects readily available to millions of viewers, teachers, and students. So they can use things such as this artwork from the 1867 event in their own curriculum, in their own reports. It's wonderfully liberating to know that through the funding of our valuable supporters that we can make this history accessible. You know, without the University of Kentucky and scholars like David Pollack and Gwen Henderson, Renette Jones, none of this would be possible. And it's a really fascinating history, very unique, not only in with slavery and the Civil War, but this Reconstruction period where they didn't fall under the Reconstruction legislation because of a pro-union state, but people like Senator Sumner really felt they should. But those were fighting words, and Senator Garrett Davis was ready to go to the mat for it. We're also establishing the Kentucky Heritage Corps through this project, where we're trying to link both faculty at colleges and students, interns, to doing the research to apply it to a specific public media project. And we have a team from Berea College who's working on this Hathaway documentary project as a model, and we hope to replicate it at the University of Kentucky, Transylvania, Northern Kentucky, all the universities in Kentucky.
I'll be very interested in the progress, and we'll check in from time to time on this.
Yeah.
and see how things are going.
From a distance. I think Kentucky has a unique relationship on civil rights and race because it's more genteel. You know, for some reason, Kentuckians who have a very strong state identity seem to get along and work through problems, with a few exceptions, and this is one of them. It was strong men like Clay and Davis that kept Kentucky basically neutral, part of the Union. But all of these gentlemen were also slave owners who, some of them, like Clay, he knew it was inevitable that slavery would fall. He was one of the colonists who wanted to basically make it possible to export all of the slaves. Or, you know, Davis, who was staunch pro for slavery. So you have this incredible mix as a border state, as a pro-slavery state, as a union state, that is fascinating when you look at it in the larger context of how it dealt with the initial civil rights period after the Civil War and during the modern civil rights movement. That's why we're excited to do this Hathaway story, because by following one family, I think we can start to shed light on the greater history of this period, which is complex, which is difficult to find. There's not a lot of documentation, but I think it's important to understand why and how Kentucky is the way it is today.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned Sumner. Is that the same Sumner that is captured in congressional lore with the caning incident?
Yeah, that's the same guy. He was vehement as an anti-slavery abolitionist, beaten nearly to death on the hall of the House at that time. And whether he fully recovered from that beating is—I read his biography—is a question of debate. But what was interesting at that time, when the Republicans dominated Congress, and this is the precursor to the impeachment trials of President Johnson following the assassination of Lincoln, Sumner had no doubt in his mind that Kentucky should fall under the Reconstruction Acts and Reconstruction legislation, which was, you're a historian, you know, it was a lot of different benchmarks to be able to become reinterned into the Union. So a lot of representatives from southern states had yet to be seated in this Congress. So Senator Garrett Davis and a few representatives from Tennessee were the only ones, the only Democrats, who were really able to counter the arguments laid down by the radical Republicans, as they were known at that time. So the Congressional Globe is a fascinating debate, and it's online. You can go visit it through the Davis Bottom website. It's really interesting to see how people were enacting change and reacting to change. And Davis saying basically all the wrongs committed against blacks and Union men in the South were fictions. And that's where Sumner brings out this article from the 4th of July, just nine or so days later, and says, these are Kentucky guys speaking out about the oppression of blacks in Kentucky. And it's not documented in the record, Davis's reaction to that, but he was ready to start a fist fight.
Man, oh man.
The bravery of not only the African Americans who were organizing this, usually quietly, but people like General Brisbin, John Fee, who was threatened numerous times, almost lynched numerous times, Willard Davis, Judge Goodlow, Reverend Graham, all of these speakers became instant targets for Knight Riders. And that really didn't kick in until a few years later. Everybody was trying to figure out what the new normal was in Kentucky. But really, the beatings, lynchings began in earnest, according to Freedmen's Bureau records, about a year and after this event and on.
Tom, do you know what kind of relative occupations the attendees would have had, the folks who attended this event on July 4th, 1867, kind of give us a thumbnail sketch of the typical attendee.
Without a doubt, most of them would have been named in the census records as laborers. Just any general work, whether that was building roads, a lot of masons, bricklayers. In fact, the masons were some of the first organized African Americans, civic and occupation organizations. You would have had many who were farmers, either hired on to cut tobacco. Even though they lived in Lexington, they would go out to the fields, surrounding fields. Um, you started to see the beginning of a professional class. And that's where the Hathaways are so extraordinary, in that Robert Hathaway, he found his calling as a Christian preacher, Christian church. And even though he lost his wife when his three kids were very young, he impressed upon the importance of education. So each one of them received the best education possible at what was called Lexington Normal School or Chandler School, and that was sponsored by the American Missionary Association. And several of them went on to higher education, including Fanny Hathaway, who attended Berea, and then Isaac Hathaway, who studied his craft, art and sculpture, at numerous institutions in the East Coast, the Art Academy of Cincinnati and others, before starting his own career. And Isaac became nationally recognized as a sculptor who created these wonderful busts of great African-American leaders, and he also established about a dozen of the ceramics departments in colleges throughout the South. The most of the families would have been laborers, the women, most of them domestics, cleaning, household work. But this was the beginning of education, any education, let alone public education. And it was also the beginning of forming the social service organizations that helped lift all African Americans up and out of the post-slavery, basically poverty.
And it serves as a poignant reminder that civil rights in Kentucky didn't start on March 5th, 1964. Far from it.
Yeah, and you know, it was amazing. We were documenting some research by one of these research teams in Berea just last week, and some of the scholars, including Dr. Turley, very respected professor from Berea, Ms. Giles, who I've worked with now for 2 years, and some of the archivists, you know, they basically asked me, why are you doing this? You know, why is it important? I said, because the civil rights movement didn't materialize out of thin air. And they all just went, finally, somebody said it. All of these communications networks, which, you know, really began during slavery, mainly through the church, it's about not what was done to African Americans at this time. It's what African Americans accomplished at this time, what they were able to initiate, organize on, you know, on their own behalf. And that's what we're trying to do with this story, is not necessarily talk about, you know, the black codes and Jim Crow and the day law and all of that. Certainly that'll be a part of it, but it's what African Americans like the Hathaways did to empower themselves.
Our guest today has been Tom Law with Voyager Media Group, and they're working with the Kentucky Archaeological Survey about these moments in time in our history that not enough people know about. And we thank you again for spending some time with us today.
You're most welcome. Anything for National Public Radio and WUKY.